Welcome. This is Jenny Ray, an independent consultant with the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team. Our team provides education, resources, and networking opportunities for military family service professionals and extension educators as they help military families build resilience and navigate life cycle transition. We invite you to engage with us and your colleagues in conversations on military life cycle issues. In this Let's Talk Transitions podcast, I'll be chatting with Dr. Patricia Lester, whose work and research has focused on developing and disseminating preventative interventions, practices, and policies, all of which that support child and family resilience in the context of trauma and adversity. As part of our conversation, we focus particularly on resilience and adversity in military children and their family. Welcome, Dr. Lester. It's a pleasure having you here. To begin, can you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Jenny. It's really a pleasure to be here and to talk about military children and families with you today. I am a child psychiatrist on faculty at UCLA, where I direct a Family Resilience Center and the Division of Population Behavioral Health. Just by background, my work with military and veteran children and families goes back about 12 years, but really even longer to an earlier point in my career when I worked with Vietnam-era veterans during my training and their families in learning different models of post-traumatic stress disorder treatment. And I, from that very early formative experience, I became interested in the ways in which families are such a critical and important part of veterans care and veteran transitions. And really my career has been focused on working with families facing all kinds of adversities, whether it's medical or mental health issue in a parent, or families and children affected by separations or community trauma, and have really spent my life developing and disseminating, doing research, but also direct service delivery for families in these contexts, and particularly focused on ways in which we can prevent mental health problems over time and support healthy development for children and positive family functioning. So when the war started now after 9/11, I was working with a number of collaborators looking at ways that our evidence-based models that had been developed in community settings could be relevant and helpful to families to active duty families facing kind of a new level of stress with the multiple deployments associated with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And that's really 15 years ago how I got started working on the adaptation of our family-centered prevention program called FOCUS, which stands for Families Overcoming Under Stress. So that's kind of a little bit about my personal and professional connection to this work. But I also live in Los Angeles, and I'm the parent of two children who recently have left home and really enjoy all kinds of academic activities related to training emerging professionals and doing technology translations of our work, as well as leading the large-scale dissemination of the FOCUS program for the Department of Defense.
Wow. That's exciting that your children are finding a passion for the same things similar things that you're very interested in, you kind of are already doing in your professional career. But you have done so much impressive and extensive work in the field, and that's why we wanted you here today to share about all your experience. I think one of the things that we'd first like to start off by talking about is, what are some of the transitions that uniquely affect military families and children that you've seen impacting mental health specifically?
Sure. Yeah, I think military families and particularly military children during the last 2 decades have really faced an unprecedented level of separation, and separations particularly related to deployment and combat deployments. And this is, you know, I think unique. I say unique because it's an all professional military who are raising children, and about half of whom have dependent children. And many of those children are very young children. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those are some unique features that I think haven't really existed for military and veteran families in prior conflicts and wars. And so that, I think, has really called for new kinds of responses and thinking. So in terms of unique transitions, you know, military families obviously have to relocate a lot. Military children are frequently changing schools related to following a parent's career. But the specific separations due to deployment that happening in the context of danger or worry about a parent's safety that I think are unique to wartime separations is it's really been a big focus, I think, of the attention and research in the last 2 decades. Mm-hmm. But also then reintegration, how families come back together, either related to deployment, and then continue forward and navigate new transitions. I think another key area is the transition to civilian life for military families, and how, you know, that really calls upon families to adapt to new settings and move to communities where people may or may not really understand military culture or service. And I think those are all important things to think about for military families. And then also, of course, when a parent or a loved one comes back or experiences an injury, whether that's a psychological or physical injury, I think those are unique transitions that families are called upon to adapt to that we really focused on in our work.
Yeah, you've definitely highlighted several of those unique challenges that children and military families are currently facing. And I wonder how you see resilience playing a role throughout these transition journeys.
Yeah, I think when we think about resilience, it's really important to think about resilient processes, you know, for within an individual or within a family, within communities, and what we can do to strengthen all of those levels around a military child or a service member or a family themselves, and that how the functioning of those relationships can be disrupted by all the, you know, kind of back and forth and transitions, and also the implications of a family member having an injury. So when we think about resilience, we really think about the both the skills that contribute to individual or family level resilience, but also some of the other aspects around a family. So whether that's strengthening schools and making or helping schools be more attuned and to understand the experience of military children and provide welcoming environments. It may be training healthcare providers in the community, mental health providers, about military family life and culture, and also some of the unique experiences they have and the perhaps behavioral health challenges that a service member may have when exposed to trauma. Mm-hmm. So all of those pieces, I think, contribute to resilience. In our work, we've really focused on family-level processes in terms of the kinds of prevention and programming work that we do. So that may be helping families with increasing their understanding and support of each other as an aspect of resilience, strengthening parenting and family co-leadership across parents. So having a consistent approach, a way to communicate with children, having a way of understanding what children at different ages may understand or need. And then also thinking a lot about strengthening family organization and routines. And those are all aspects that help to build resilience across a family system.
Great. Thank you for sharing those. And I wonder, kind of just to piggyback off of that, I've been thinking about this, and I just wonder about what you have found in your work or your research recently. What are some of those the factors that kind of help to, you know, become a resilient individual?
Well, I think having really kind of approaches to emotional regulation, this is something we focus on quite a lot, having strategies for being able to identify and talk about one's feelings, whether that's a child or an adolescent or an adult or even, couples, to have that awareness of labeling, talking about their feelings, and then also having really individualized strategies for how to regulate those feelings during times of stress. So that's sort of a foundational component, I think, to a lot of the other kinds of things that contribute to resilience. But if I were going to focus on one key thing, and it would really be communication. Mm-hmm. So for families to have this a shared vocabulary, to have a plan, to be able to share with each other, what's going on, to be able to hear each other's voice after an experience, and to have the opportunity to do that in a way that is collaborative and supportive. So, you know, when you think about a separation, that might be really making a plan, parents making a plan for how they're, you know, an upcoming deployment or a parent going off for a training, and allow the child to be able to ask questions, which could be difficult questions about safety and, you know, timing of return, but really have and then also have a strategy for staying in connection while they're separated. I think those are all things that can really lead to strengthening and maintaining relationships and help then also with reintegration on the other side of a separation. It's true for a couple too, having a plan that you think through together and map out for the future. And it may be also true if a parent comes back with an injury or a loved one comes back with an injury. Having a communication strategy is really key. And a lot of the skills that we work on developing, whether they're problem solving or setting goals for a family, are really linked to that communication strategy, and then also being able to tie that to emotional regulation skills.
Yeah, those are great suggestions that you provided. Thank you for sharing those. You were talking about the challenges for military families recently for separations, and especially for active duty families who have young children. And I wonder, what are some implications that you think might be helpful for these families, looking at it from an ecological or a family systems perspective?
Well, I think your questions are around a family system and thinking about the impact of family change or challenges across the system.
Yeah.
It's really useful to think about how in a system, you know, sort of the well-being of any individual or any relationship in the system, whether that's a sibling-to-sibling relationship or a parent-to-child or a marital relationship, all of those, either the individual or the relationship, any of those can be stressed. And when that happens, it can cascade or kind of reverberate across the family system. So when we think about stress or change in families, it's just really important to keep that in mind. And I think it's helpful because very often when you work with a family, you know, around some kind of targeted concern, say a parent comes in concerned about a child's behavior or their new worries or that they can't sleep. Very often when you do work on that issue, there's opportunities to be thinking about the implications for other parts of the family system. And that when the sleep issue, for instance, starts to improve, it can really help all the different parts of the family. It may mean that then both parents are sleeping better, and it may reduce stress and conflict across the couple. So there's, I think that's what we mean in many ways by working at the family systems level, is just keeping that in mind. And we see in our research and also in our programming that makes sense to families, and it also leads to improved outcomes across the whole family system. So that parenting programs, the ADAPT program that Abby Givertz has developed and studied, really focuses on parenting, but she also sees improvements in parental mental health functioning and across a whole host of family level outcomes. And that's not surprising. That's really consistent with the child development literature and family-centered intervention literature that we've seen in other settings as well.
Yeah, I think those are very helpful. And I think it was very, it was on point, because you're sharing examples about how these families are able to adapt and adjust, and it kind of just has a ripple effect. So if we're improving, one issue, for lack of a better word, we're able to kind of help the whole family
right.
all together.
Yeah, and the focusing on strengthening, for instance, problem solving skills and having a strategy for that for parents often becomes a model for children, and can really, that everybody can start to adopt and understand. And that's what we often see in family systems work, is that when one member adopts or strengthens some aspect of their own kind of functioning, that can become something that everybody can pick up on and start to do, and it gets kind of incorporated into family life and family functioning.
Sure. Yeah, I can definitely see how that would relate. I wonder about, through your programming, your research, or even just your personal experience, how do you help these families kind of adjust to these skills? So you talked about communication. You talked about emotional regulation. What do how do these families learn these skills? So what does that look like, I guess?
Well, that in our program, that we have a lot of concrete kinds of activities, depending on whether it's a couple or whether it's parents with a young child, that families can learn these core skills. So one of our key tools is a feeling thermometer is adapted and has all kinds of strategies. So it could be a graphic activity. The feeling thermometer can be something that's on the refrigerator. It can be used as a check-in tool. But it really starts to help build a vocabulary for talking about feelings and emotions. It then becomes kind of a daily opportunity within a family system. It's in our program, it's color-coded, and that's really important, I think, for younger children. Or I think everyone really likes this idea that, I'm in the green, or I'm feeling more distressed or upset. I'm sort of headed up a feeling thermometer towards the red. It becomes kind of an easy way to reference and include awareness across the family system. So that's one example, but there's a whole array of tools around goal setting and problem solving, communication. I mentioned a family meeting. That's really an important skill that we teach, and help families structure that into their sort of weekly life as a way to come together and problem solve in a collaborative way. So those are some of the tools, and specifically families who are experiencing or for who have a member who's experienced some kind of trauma or loss. We have skills around managing stress, trauma, and loss. So, you know, when an individual comes back with post-traumatic stress, they may be quite reactive to triggers or reminders. And that's an important thing for families to be able to communicate about, to be able to understand. Otherwise, it can be really confusing, upsetting, particularly to young children. So an example of that might be, you know, a parent coming back, and it's very hard for them to tolerate being in, say, a big department store or at a theme park with a fireworks show. Mm-hmm. And rather than just avoid or withdraw from those experiences, if you help families understand that what that is and why that is part of the process of healing from post-traumatic stress, and to give them a way to manage that reminder. So, you know, maybe a dad has to leave a Walmart, you know, in the middle of it because it's just too overwhelming. Maybe the family just has a strategy to know that that might happen. And rather than him just disappear, he can go outside, text the family, let them know he's okay. And then it's not scary or worrisome. But it can also be helpful for the service member to get support, you know, even in the moment of experiencing a reminder. So those are some of the kinds of ways we help at a family level have greater understanding and strategies for communication around some of the things that might be normally disrupting in a family.
Sure. Those are great examples that you shared. So you talked about at the family level. Do you guys provide any training for professionals regarding these types of tools?
We do, and other programs do as well, but we have a training institute here at UCLA, and we do training in the focus model, but we also do training for non-clinical professionals in understanding the needs of military and veteran families and sort of how people in whatever their role, so, you know, whether we've done trainings with government support or hotline operators to really understand some of these issues and how they may play out in the clients that they're serving. Same thing for educators. Military Child Education Coalition has great training for schools and educators and even a peer mentor support program. There's lots of good training out there. And yes, we have an online training, a module and foundations of our program that's actually free, and if a system or a community-based organization wants to adopt the model, we can train and certify providers in the delivery of focus for couples, for families with young children, etc.
That's fantastic. I love that it's free as well.
not fully adopting the program isn't free, but the online introductory program is free, the Focus 101 training.
Okay. So maybe you've already highlighted on some of these items, and I apologize if I'm reiterating, but what are maybe some of those things that you highlight in that introduction online training that you provide?
Well, we actually introduce, and this is a program that introduces focus kind of for all families. It's not specific just to military families.
Okay.
But we really introduce the model, the core skills. Also foundational to our program is developing a family narrative. So that's a really important piece. The parents come together and share their experiences through family transitions. And they do that in a way that's kind of mapped to the feeling thermometer. So they're sort of referencing how difficult or what their recollection of their stress level was at the time of transitions. But it's an opportunity. I think this is a really important part of this activity. It's an opportunity to listen to each other, to have empathy and understanding. It may be the first time that one or both of the parents have talked about particularly difficult circumstances, and to do that in a way that is kind of that's safe, that's collaborative, and that is also really focused on strengths, what they did to work together to be where they are now, and then looking at kind of the here and now across a couple. And we do that with children too. Children build a graphic narrative, a time map of their experience, and older children do something similar to the adults. And then the family comes together and shares their experiences. And what we find very often is there are these moments of appreciation. And it's also an opportunity to maybe correct or to address confusing questions or persistent questions that a child may have, or maybe a misunderstanding of why something happened. Parents can address that. But then children can also bring their concerns to their parents, and parents have the opportunity to say, you know, oh, that's not why, you know, your mom went away, but this is what happened. And I think that moment of people really beginning to hear each other and understand is often a window, an opening, to begin then to work together with collaboration going forward. So then we work on family level skills, following the larger family narrative.
Okay. That's a great example. I love that the family members are each able to share their own perspective, and then kind of move forward from there. And I think,
it's often what parents express is the most important part for them, is they will say, I never knew that was what was on my child's mind. Mm-hmm. They didn't know that he or she was concerned. And it was really such an important piece for me to have to be able to address what they were worried about. So I think that narrative component is really important.
Definitely. I wonder if you professionally think that this type of tool would be beneficial for families before the deployment, or is this something after, or maybe where you see that on the timeline, I guess?
That's a great question. I think that when we first developed Focus, maybe or adapted it from our existing evidence-based program, and that was about 15 years ago, we thought it would be used primarily as a reintegration type of program when families were coming back together. However, what we've learned from doing this for the last 11 years or so within the Department of Defense, that families, first of all, there was no sort of single reintegration period. There was often, you know, it was in between deployments, so there was this cycle. But that preparation for deployment was really, really important. And what you just said, it's very having the opportunity to come together as a family, to learn some of these skills, to make a plan. We heard quite often from families and service members in particular, was this program was so helpful to me because then I knew, you know, my family was in a good place. We had a way to talk about this, and and I could feel prepared and focused on my work, and we had a strategy also for how we were going to manage the separation. So I think that it is useful for families to have these skills and to have these opportunities to have a conversation, you know, before, after, ongoing. We work now with veteran families as well, and really focus quite a lot, not on deployments, but on other kinds of transitions. And that it is quite useful in that context too.
Sure. Would you mind sharing a few of those transitions that those veterans might be going through and kind of how you help them navigate those quarters?
Sure. I think that, well, I'll just speak a little bit to, you know, family services are harder to find in once you leave the military, that are ones that are really specific to the needs of veteran or Guard and Reserve families and embedded in our communities. So that's a big thing, because it's, you know, the Veterans Administration is really a healthcare organization and tends to focus on the veteran as an individual, although there are some couples programs and some family support services, but not uniformly across the VA system. And veteran-serving organizations and communities, too, also tend to be more individually focused. So I think one critical piece for engaging families, veteran families, is really having, you know, a strategy for reaching out to them, for integrating into service systems or school settings where they may be already, public schools or universities, community colleges. We actually have a Veteran Family Wellness Center here at the Greater Los Angeles VA that's a collaborative initiative between UCLA and the VA, and it's on the VA campus and provides some of these kinds of educational and transitional services. But in terms of the kinds of issues, you know, often veteran families are going to a new community. There are issues around finding a new job or finding a job, finding housing. We've adapted our program recently for homeless veteran families who may really need more attention to engaging support and also having a way to work together. So to manage some of these much more difficult strategies, and also in the VA setting, a number of the majority of our families are also receiving some kind of treatment for a healthcare or mental health issue. So really having greater attention to the impact of psychological health injuries or physical injuries, and really having families have communication strategies around those injuries is really important.
Definitely. You're doing very great work, and you guys are really trying to connect and get those resources out to those veterans and their families. I think one of the biggest challenges is families who may not be wanting to reach out. And I just wonder what your perspective is on how to reach those families, especially professionals who are out in the community who may not be specifically working with military families, but, you know, maybe they're National Guard or they're new veterans coming out there. Just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. There's different pieces to this. One is actually having a kind of policies and around identifying whether an organization is serving military and veteran families in the work that they're doing. So, for instance, the work that schools have done, and I know the Military Child Education Coalition led a lot of this work about including a military child identifier in school registration so that schools could know if they had or were serving military and veteran children, and that would allow them to more strategically do training or have programming within, you know, a setting where they're not necessarily set up to focus just on military children, but can certainly improve their system and offer opportunities for professional development and offer specific programming. So I think that kind of strategy should be used across community mental health settings, really having a way to know if they are serving military and veteran populations. And that way, they can target training and really be more responsive and adaptive, kind of meeting people where they are. But the other side of it, and I know there's, you know, it's often true, is that families are hard to reach. They're harder to reach once they're in, you know, once they've left the military or Guard and Reserve families, you know, it's much harder to engage families and services. But I think that we have to be really thoughtful about engagement and really work on meeting families where they are. And so that may mean, you know, mobile tools or, you know, computer-based delivery of services or information. It may mean tele-delivery of our programs. One of the things we've done, and we just completed a randomized trial of Focus for Early Childhood that was done as an in-home tele-delivery platform for families with young children. And we've done this also in our active duty service program, and that in, which can serve activated Guard and Reserve. And I think this is really exciting to me, the thought that we can reach families, you know, kind of in their homes, where they live, at a time that's convenient to them, in a format that works for them. So those are the kinds of things that we've been really thinking about and working on, and I know others are doing similar kinds of initiatives to try to bridge that gap. And so we're, you know, really more able to engage people in a way that is convenient for them and makes sense to them. And then also just, I think family services as a whole are often a portal for engagement. I mean, sometimes it's quite hard when you have a concern about a mental health problem to come in for services for yourself. But what we've seen and really try to work on is if, you know, parents may come for services for their children and through that process realize that it could be really helpful to seek out behavioral health services for themselves, because they start to really understand perhaps how post-traumatic stress or depression or a substance use issue is affecting their family and their parenting. And that is very activating and helps link people to services.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing those. I really liked the second idea that you guys shared, that you're trying to get families involved at their own, in their own homes, and bridging that gap. I really liked that idea. It's exciting new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about it too. I think we're going to be expanding that work through the larger Focus program this year. I'm excited because I think it's a great opportunity to reach people.
I agree. And I think it kind of helps with that, maybe that concern or issue of childcare, if, you know, families had issues of attending the program off, you know, outside of their home, they might have issues of that, but definitely kind of helps to just meet them where they're at. In kind of wrapping this up, I wonder if there are other implications or resources that you might want to share with professionals, those kind of listening in today. What might be helpful for military families and children as they struggle or they kind of are trying to overcome these transitions, such as deployments or transitioning out of the military?
Yeah. I think there are some great, you know, online kind of inventories and resources that are now available for families and couples. Military OneSource is obviously a great repository and actually gives people access to counseling and consultation services, but has, for professionals, has materials for their work with families. The focusproject.org website has our mobile app, have a whole range of materials and tools, from anything from talking with children of different ages about difficult issues or deployments, and also, you know, how to hold a family meeting or some of the kinds of at-home skills that you could do. Sesame Street has amazing tools for families with very young children. And they, you know, there's toolkits and guides, and all of these things I think really support professionals' work directly with families. And then there's also a number of training groups and initiatives that can support professionals if they're interested in developing their skills in evidence-based practice. At the local installation level, I think that there's some unique resources, so it's harder to make specific recommendations, mm-hmm. but I feel like there's really now a wealth of information out there, and there's a lot of technology-based tools also that are available for families. So I think it's really reaching out to Military OneSource, reaching out to local command and installation-level resources. And then, you know, there's a growing research base, although it's still, you know, somewhat limited, but in terms of the evidence coming in for different programs that serve military and veteran families. I think we do have a lot of more work to be done in that arena, particularly around veteran families. But, some of that is ongoing. And I expect that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to learn a lot. And then also, I think there's some important opportunities with longitudinal research and large administrative data research to help inform and refine what we're doing with military and veteran families. But I think for professionals, as I mentioned, there are some great training programs. Some states have the STAR Behavioral Health Provider Training Program that is a partnership between Purdue University Military Family Research Institute and the Center for Deployment Health that actually helps, you know, develop skills and training in civilian providers for serving military and veteran families. And there are a number of other strategies that are aligned with that approach as well.
That's great. I'm excited about that, and I am looking forward to sharing those with our listeners on our webpage. I wonder if there's any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners, any take-home messages.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk with you today. It's definitely a passion of ours and our whole team to do this work, and it's such a privilege to do it and to work with so many amazing professionals and leaders to try to really address and refine our strategies in a way that supports military and veteran families who we will honor every day and appreciate. So I think that's my closing message, is really just an expression of gratitude to you and the Military Family Learning Network, but also to military families themselves.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We just appreciate all the work that you're doing, and your work is just as much beneficial, you know, helping out those families to digging in the research and providing those research-based programs are so helpful as well. So we thank you for what you're doing as well.
Thank you.
From all of us at the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team, we thank you, Dr. Lester, so much for taking time to chat with us today. For those listening today, thank you for joining us. I encourage you to refer to the resources mentioned in this podcast on this webpage under the list entitled Additional Materials. We encourage our listeners to learn more about Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions and other resources available, including other podcasts, blogs, and free webinars at militaryfamilies.extension.org/family/transitions.
This production of the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team is based upon work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense, under award numbers 2015-48770-24368 and 2019-48770-30366.